Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Dow where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Welcome up, Great Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. It's about where we're on the board. SP futures down 7.25. NASDAQ futures down 16. Dow futures down 62. Man, you see, now that you're married, you don't have to use this Bumble, do you?
You know, I missed out on the dating app thing for the most part just because I had a girlfriend or whatever, so I kind of missed out on that. But my brother claims that Bumble's pretty sweet.
Now, how could it be any different at this point? We've got Tinder, we got Hinge.
Well, the difference is, for Bumble specifically, and this is the one I know a little bit about, only because my brother told me about it relatively recently, like within the last year. The reason why it's much better than the other ones is that it's not a bunch of horny dudes swiping every chick that they see. The girl has to swipe. So you get a you post your profile, your specs, your picture, your, you know, whatever, your interests, your job. I don't know what the hell you post. And then they come after you.
Why would I post my picture?
If you're trying to date somebody.
Why wouldn't I post Robert Redford's picture?
Well, you can, but...
young Robert Redford.
That's going to work once, and then you're going to be kicked off the app.
Ah.
They come after you, and so you know they're already interested. You're not, you know, throwing your pole out there and whatever. Or I guess you are throwing your pole out there and seeing who bites. But they're coming after you, and so it really changed the whole dating app game. Because Tinder and some of the original ones, Match and stuff, was just a ton of dudes just flooding women with requests.
So would this work like for Kevin?
Could work for anyone.
Some of us are beyond hope.
Yeah. So the lady is on TV yesterday, right?
And some of us have no interest in anything more than, you know, let's go out once in a while.
That's the truth.
And if you want to go the whole friends with benefits route, I'm cool with that. But any involvement and commitment at my age, I don't think so.
Well, this thing gets priced at 43. They got this lady on TV, and she's
youngest female CEO to ever take a company public.
Yeah, and Maddie, if she was
31, I think.
If you, by the way, she's very very well spoken. But she's one of these. If you had dinner with her and she was across the table. She's so intense. Every time she wants to say something, her head comes at you. You'd like to be backing up if you were like on the other side of the table. I mean, talk about this is going to totally revolutionize everything. I mean, she is into this like there's no tomorrow. But she's, you know, but what would possess this thing to trade $76 out of the gate? And these things come and they go. I mean, they come and they go. I mean, it's just. I mean, it is different, like you say. They're all kind of different. But I would love to. You know, it's so bizarre. You know. I was thinking. I was waiting for you this morning. It reminds me a lot of the psychology of sports, you know, where you could have a totally horse bleep team for like, you know, 30 years, like the Buffalo Bills or something. All of a sudden they get a good year and people come flying out like they've always been a Bills fan. You know, from where? I mean, the psychology of people never changes. I guess I should never have done something like read all his Greek plays and all this stuff. And then you read Shakespeare, it never changes. I mean, This the mentality right now is exactly 1999. And any new stock that came out, everything, every IPO doubled. I mean, you look at these IPOs, nothing is more screwed up in the business of, I think the stock market is cool because it reprices stuff. But these IPOs, when they come out, nothing is more bizarre. I actually put some people in this new IPO, ETF, which, they're younger people, they want it in there, so I put them in there. We'll see how they do. But What the hell's the name of the thing? AK something something? I don't know. I'll find it. ARKK. So the whole idea is that you hire guys to go around and do this road show, and you price the place at $40. So on the one hand, you say, Matty Weber, you know, your sausage factory is worth $40. Meanwhile, you run around all your other people telling them, ah, this place is really worth $80. Okay. But you're paying them, right? So then they go out, and of course, the thing trades like 70, you know, your thing is worth 40, it trades 80 the first day, and like everybody's happy. And I'm going, what kind of shenanigans is that? But that's what people do. And they've done it for, you know, long before I got here. And that's part of the game. And I mean, I know you only pop out a certain percentage of your shares. So even if you, quote, get hosed on the $40, I mean, you got plenty left that you're making money on. I get that. But still, it is such a, the part that one person is on both sides of the transaction. I mean, there's no real way that Audrey cannot represent both sides and tell somebody, oh man, this house is worth like $50,000. Tell an expert, it's really worth $100,000. I mean, it just doesn't happen. You know, another, but yet these guys, that's what they do. And then the thing came out yesterday and now everybody's all over. But this is like 99 though. No matter what comes out, it's higher, it's worth more. If you were to take somehow right now, and again, I'm not, you know, I've got my people along a lot of places, but I don't, this whole kind of, if you were to take, what do you think, Kevin, if you took the top 100 companies and looked at their prices, not even the top, all these ones that are just flying out, that are doing this stuff, all the cannabis places and all these other places, I mean, that, or just, they all got clobbered, but if you were to actually print out or extend out how much business they'd have to do to essentially grow into the stock price and make money and send people a dividend, even a small one, what do you figure we have to do? Triple our GDP?
We could do that.
Yeah, we could do that.
We're going to do that in the next, well, like 2 years, so don't worry about it.
We're going to do that because we have so much money out there that everybody's going to cost three times as much.
Yeah, it's just a matter of, you know, nominally we will. Real GDP growth? No.
How is it, Kevin, is it just far enough time away from 1982 or 3? Is like 30 years... Is that the magic number for...
That'd be 40 years, by the way, from the early 80s.
You're right. I'm usually pretty good at this in the morning, but that, I can do fractions. I can't do whole numbers, man. I mean, you know. All right, so is 40 years, 39 years? Is that the spot where if you get there, people totally forget what happened before or what?
You know, it's... Flippantly, I would tell you that, hey, I've been forgetting things for quite a while now, but that's... You know, that's an age issue. But I think people believe what they want to believe. You know, it really is, we're such a persuadable, species, that, you know, if it's gonna fix something now, we decide that we are willing to believe in, or at least suspend disbelief about any long-term consequences of any of this stuff. And by long-term, I don't necessarily mean 20 years out. I am talking about, you know, what's going to happen next year or what's going to happen the year after. But I do think that in this case, the Biden administration is going to wind up looking really bad over the economy, because I don't see how it can help but turn south. And it's not just stock market. It's not just stock investments. It's the fact that, you know, we pump so much. So many dollars out from nowhere into the economy that we're sooner or later they're going to have to start reporting the inflation. It exists already. Sooner or later it's going to have to be acknowledged, because it's going to be hurting too many people. And if we keep doing things that are counter to to employment, then we're going to have that problem. And the thing is, this was all in place. This is all, these forces were all happening, you know, and have been happening for several years. And because of the flurry of activity that we've seen out of the White House with all the executive orders, and we're going to have we're going to run a spending bill through the reconciliation process and so on, it's going to be pretty hard for them to point back to Trump, Freudian slip. And it's going to be pretty hard for him to point back to Trump and blame him when we have all this intervening activity from the Democrats that is going to be coincident or at least slightly precede what's going to happen in the economy. What's bad is going to happen in the economy. Does that make sense?
Well, instead of trying to look at what Trump did wrong and doing differently, they're piling on, which is even more bizarre when you think about it.
Well, and they're eliminating any of the things is that you know that he did that helped.
Well, yeah. Well, that's. But I, you know, the thing of it's amazing how I don't. But
well, as I forget exactly how a buddy of mine, Bill, worded it, but you know, every once in a while he stumbled into some really good policy, and no one wanted to give him. You know, nobody wanted to credit that.
Well, that's right, and he for 4 years did nothing but blame Obama and everything bad had happened. So I mean, it's these guys are getting pretty bizarre. They're getting like kids on a playground, for God's sake.
Well, but he, you know, he started the blame game, you know, before taking any actions, and then of course anything like, you know, improvement in employment numbers, you know, anything else that you wanted to lay out there that looked good, he could pat himself on the back and take credit for it. The problem is that the current administration is preempting its ability to even blame, which in politics is a huge blunder. Never surrender the blame.
Here's a good one. While accepting the Republican Party's presidential nomination in 1928, Hoover commented, "Given the chance to go forward with the policies of the last 8 years, we shall soon, with the help of God, be in the sight of the day when poverty will be banished from this nation forever." How's that a myopic view of what the hell is going on around you?
Bad guess.
I mean, I have an article here, if I can get it over to Matty. It's the stock market crash of 1929, and it said if you go back and review history of it, it was an absolute foregone conclusion. Should not have been a surprise to anybody. Of course, history is always easy to do, but I honestly just think, though, at this point, Kevin, it doesn't help to have your Federal Reserve Chairman saying that there was no inflation in the last 20 years Wednesday when he's giving a speech. Because they were asking him, you know, it's starting to pop out all over the place.
Well, you know what? It isn't that he said it. It's that he might believe it.
Yeah.
And that's what doesn't help is he doesn't know. He's supposed to be this brilliant guy. He doesn't know what the hell he's doing.
But when I mentioned the 40 years part, though, I think I can't be the only person that says, well, when you have, you know, again, these people make a lot of money. They seem to be COVID proof because they're getting paid. They live in a, you know, and they're doing fine at people on CNBC. But how does somebody give a report on lumber prices up 30%? And then the next report get a sexual excitement about Home Depot's same store sales up 5%, and you don't put the two together. I mean, part of news is you can't be Sammy Sosa. I didn't inject steroids. By the way, I didn't do it in Dominican Republic or the U.S. It doesn't mean you didn't have steroids, right? I mean, at some point you have to have some knowledge base of what you're telling people. But anyway, I'm saying we're way beyond the spot here where we should be talking about inflation. When McDonald's comes out and says their sales are up 3%. I mean, I don't go in there very often, but once in a while, I mean, you got to be Einstein to make sense of the dollar menu, now to $1.50, now to $2. I mean, what do you think their prices are up? I mean, the dollar soft drink is what now, 2.5? I mean, I don't know how you even corral those guys to what the prices are, but they're sure as hell not down.
I'm going to have to go over to McDonald's just to see what they're charging for things, because I really don't have an idea, and I could see myself pulling up to the drive-up and checking out the prices and saying, may I take your order? No, I just wanted to see what your crap costs.
Well, I did the large coffee in Homer Glen now at the Dunkin' Donuts is $3.30.
Well, that's more than right here.
Yeah, I said to the guy, you're more than downtown. The guy goes, yes. Okay. He's happy about it. All right. Okay. I mean, we haven't been in a while, Matty.
I stop by there after the show all the
okay,
time.
Okay, all right. Yeah, so you're holding out on me.
No, it's not open when we come in. But after the show, on my way walking to the train, I grab a cup of coffee for the train.
You don't backtrack.
Matt, leave a little early and pick up two copies and run one back upstairs to Tom.
Run one back upstairs and then go back downstairs and then miss my train.
Miss your train. But
I'm gonna pull up the McDonald's menu and see if we can get that.
Oh, good luck with that, because it's. I mean,
do they hide it?
No, but by the time I'm guessing that the average Big Mac or something is probably not going up that much. I mean, if he's giving zero in on that, but the whole rest of the menu, they were down to a dollar cheeseburgers and all, I mean, who knows where all that stuff's going.
Well, it's hard to sift through McDonald's because they've made so many changes in recent years to the menu. So that was all very intentional. They were really having trouble getting anybody in at dinner time, and their sales were lagging and so on. And they put on, I know this because I use it as a strategy case. They put on their signature sandwiches where you can get, I forget what they're called, but you can get they're a spiffier sandwich like you might get at a Red Robin or someplace like that. And you can get it as the burger, you can get it as a fried chicken or a fried chicken filet or a grilled chicken. And, they've tried to build up their, menu for adult tastes, so you can bring your kids for dinner, and if they get a happy meal, and you get something you actually like, and that's their that's been a strategy, and it was successful for them before we got to the last couple of years. It's recovered a lot of their lost market share, or at least stemmed the losses that they have. The point being, you really need to dive in and see how many units they're selling of everything, not the in-store sales. That's never going to tell you much, and it wasn't going to tell you much, 3 years ago either.
Well, it's the same thing with the Home Depot. Same thing with every place.
Yeah. So you really you need to see more, and unfortunately, we don't easily get that data. I'm sure it's out there. Some of the industry, some of the trade journals probably have it. You just got to find out, what the trade journals are for that industry.
Well, that's true. The incredible infrastructure we had before when we had this problem. Plus, I don't know what society would have been like. I know I was talking about his history here, but I don't know what society would have been like from 1977, say, or 76 to 82, if the people in the, I can't imagine if my parents were making 1% on their savings, because they were saving up, they didn't have any 401(k)s in those days or anything. They were saving up for their retirement. And I can't imagine what it would have been like if they were getting 1% in the bank, or half of 1%, and all the guys at Pullman would have worked the 5 years I was there and longer, say for 8 years, with the inflation being 12% and they're making 2% raise. You would have lost 50% of your power in 5 years. And if somebody would have been dumb enough to sell us for our 60-car MBTA contract that took, 3.5 years to build, or 3 years to build from front to back, if somebody would have not had, I'm going to say inflation those days, if I can recall, was like 11%, Kevin, or 10 or 8 or something. It was pretty high. So if you'd have inked that contract, if you were some, I won't say young, because you're young, you're dumb, you're not, but if you would not have recognized the future, or noticed what other people were doing, if you'd had a seat contract or for air conditioning contract, I don't see how you could possibly have, with the prices going up 40, 50, well, let's say 35% in the 3 years, how could you not be out of business? I mean, it was that bad. Or would have been if you didn't jump on it. And I'm thinking if we have 2 or 3 years of this before people recognize what's going on, I don't see how the hell middle of whatever's left of middle America, and surely low class America. I mean, you can say what you want about giving somebody $15 an hour, which is probably not going to get there. When they come out of this mess, it'll be maybe $12 an hour or something, or $12.50. And some people
it'll be stair stepped.
Okay, but either way, I'll bet the $15 number becomes 13.5 when it's. I'm saying I bet it gets negotiated down a little bit. But if we're actually talking about 5, 8, 10% a year, I don't. You're not even breaking even. Everybody's thinking they're doing you a favor. Plus, I got news for you. Somebody making 10 right now is way behind the curve. And if we have inflation of 8-9% a year for 3 or 4 years, if he's making 15, he's further behind the curve, Kevin. Right? Because the expenses are much higher than his salary. So if they go up the same percentage, you're further behind, right? Or am I math
wrong? Well, yeah, and that's part of it, Tom, but the other part of it is hardly anybody's making minimum wage anyway. So even if you raise it to 12, guess what? Hardly anybody, you know, that you're kind of catching up to where a lot of people already are.
If you, they're at the point, when you start talking about 11 and 12, they're at the point where an awful lot of people are paying that. Small town, yeah. Walmart, small town, your restaurants for sure are paying that, right, Manny? I mean, your brother has to tell you that. I mean, when they went from 10 to 11, the guys over here at the Dunkin' Donuts almost pooped, right?
I mean, I looked this up recently, like within the last week, and I think there's only like 1.5 million people that are actually making $7.25 that work full time. I mean, there's a lot more than that if you count like the high school jobs and stuff like that, but we're not counting those. If you raise that to $15, I think those people will probably just lose their jobs.
Well, I was
You know, and they'll lose them to part-time workers like high school kids.
Yeah, and so, but
because nobody's going to want to pay benefits on top of it, so so they're going to you know, they're going to go to part-time. Everybody who pays benefits to full-time people. So you're really, even if the those workers can replace the hours by working two jobs, they're going to wind up without any benefits where they might have had them in many other cases.
So that's probably true. And then so the rest of the low end wage earners, like Kevin said, have been making quite a bit more than $7.25 for a while now. Now, whether that's $9 or $10, or in Chicago it's $11.25, or in some places it's $12. It's probably not 15. Should the minimum wage raise above $7.25? I would say it probably should. But I bet if you did some research, you could come up with the real actual number that it should be. And it's probably, you know, above 8 or 9 and lower than 15. I don't know what the number is, but I bet you could find it pretty easily.
Well, as usual, I seem to be off point here. First of all, Maddie's absolutely correct. When you talk about a national minimum wage, in most states, there's not a whole lot of people making 7.25, right? I mean, right, Matty.
It's 1.5 million.
Well, and it isn't
total.
Even a statewide thing. It's even nationally, even in states where the minimum wage is higher than is up at $10, $11, $12 an hour, wherever it is. Most people are not making even that.
Okay, the point I'm trying to make here, clumsily as usual, because there's always like several levels to every conversation. In Illinois, I think, and you guys, let's zero in Illinois for a second, because we did just go from what, 950 to 1050 or something, maybe? And I'm going to say that an awful lot of workers were right on that number.
Illinois' minimum wage is just $8.25.
What was it, the city then?
The city went to $11.25.
Okay, again, I'm narrowing it down even more. What my point on this whole mess is, if minimum wage, actually, if you're close to the market rate, it's a big deal. If you're not, you can. If it's 7.25, we can raise it a quarter every 6 months and be a hero as a politician, not do any good, right, Manny? I mean, you're not doing any harm. Right?
Yeah, and by the way, Chicago, the recent one I think you're talking about, and I was even outdated on this, this from December of 2020, so just a few months ago, says currently Chicago's minimum wage is $13.50 per hour for small employers and $14 for large employers.
Right, and my economic point here, and I'm making it pretty clumsily, is they are at the cusp or over the cusp. So when we saw them go from what, 3-4 years ago, Maddie, the 10 to 11 or 10 to 10.50, the people at the Dunkin' Donuts raised the price of the coffee and cut the girls back to from 8 to 7 hours. And every restaurant we know was actually paying 2 years ago 10. When it went to 11, they're like, what the bleep? But, so it's a whole different politics on this, is my only point. If you're actually at a number to mean something. Right? I mean, if it was 7 and everybody's paying everybody 10 and you raise the date, nobody'd care. Right?
Right.
But I'm saying in Chicago right now, I think they're past the market rate. And
I think they might be. I think it's close.
Yeah, but it's been right on the edge.
$13.50 for less than 20 workers. I'm trying to read this on the fly here. For employers with 4 to 20 workers, it's $13.50 is the Chicago minimum wage. If you're above that, 21 workers or more, it's $14 per hour is the minimum wage.
Well, I mean, and Kevin, I mean, this is the, not just because he's saying, but this is the Republican side of the story, is that if you raise it too far past the market rate, you not only bury businesses, you end up losing jobs. And that's absolutely correct. If it's below that and you raise it on the Democratic side, nobody cares because it's below it anyway, right? And I'm guessing in some places, if you raise it from 7.25 to 8.25, people will grudgingly say, hey, Maddie's really worth 8.25. It's no big deal. But to go from, like I say, I know that a couple of restaurant guys, you know the people I'm talking about, Maddie. When it went from 10 to 11 or 11.50, they're like, wait a minute. My whole budget was based on 10. I can't raise my prices in the restaurant. What am I going to do? So when you get on the edge, it's a big deal.
Well, and just doing quick Google search here. So in Chicago, if you're making $13.50, which is the Chicago minimum wage, and if you're trying to figure out if that's a competitive number or if it's above the competitive number, that would be $21.60 a month before taxes, right? The median rent in Chicago for a one-bedroom apartment, it says, is $15.50 a month. So there's no way you could even afford a one bedroom apartment in Chicago at $13.50 an hour, a median apartment.
Well, $13.50 times what? There's 1,780 hours in the world or in a year. Is that what I remember from my Pullman days?
I just did $13.50 times 40, and then so that's a week, obviously, which is 540, and then times four to represent a month.
So it's $24,000.
So it's yeah. So you're $2,160 a month pre taxes. And if your one bedroom apartment, your median one bedroom apartment is $15.50, a studio, median studio is $12.50. That's a pretty high percentage of your rent, especially when you take taxes and everything else you have to take out of it. Like you're eating peanut butter and jelly and you don't have a car and.
Well, you're like the runners on the floor when I come down there. You got a roommate.
Yeah. And, so I mean, it can be done.
Which is okay when you're 22.
It's okay when you're 22. You, like you said, you can have a roommate and hopefully you move up in that job and start making more money or you know, whatever. But if you're trying to, if you have a family or something on that, I would say it's not even a competitive wage in Chicago.
Well, yeah. Now, repeat the calculation for, Rantoul.
Yeah.
Or repeat it for Hattiesburg, Mississippi.
Well, that's why when you have
and so my point of that is if you're going to set the minimum wage, you don't set it for Chicago. You set it for your rural areas, your places that you know. If you think $7.25 doesn't cut it, you know, put it for what it should be in Hattiesburg, and then Illinois is welcome or Chicago is welcome to have a higher minimum wage to address their cost of living issues. But this idea that the federal government is just going to impose it on everybody is—it's not even economically sound, and it's stupid.
Well, sure, I
would agree. Going from 7.25 to 15 makes no sense.
No,
it's just you're more than doubling it. It doesn't make any sense. Now going, but you can do the research, like Kevin said. You can look at all of the major cities, medium cities, small towns. Do the research and come up with a number that makes sense, and maybe it's $10 an hour, or maybe it's 9, or maybe it's 11. I don't know what that number is, but I mean, I don't know why you can't just do the math instead of just jumping to 15. That doesn't make sense. I agree.
Well, without
but we're locked in on 15, and we're going to impose that on the entire country, and then we're going to scratch our heads and go, why aren't they hiring people? These business owners are just so selfish.
Well, I have a couple of points to make after break. Because this is a real big economics lesson, and people talk about it on one side of the hour or the other on TV, not with Kevin, you wonder if these people ever had a class. S&P futures down 7, NASDAQ futures down 18. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howie, Mr. Weber, Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us as well. S&P futures down 550, NASDAQ futures down 15 and a quarter. Again, we're at pretty much market highs here, so this isn't much of a sell-off. We got the Dow. Let me refresh everything. We want to be refreshed, Manny. How's that sound? Dow's down 46 points. We've got the Nikkei down 42 points, which has been the first time in a while they've been down. Shanghai, I'm thinking, was not open. And Hang Seng, not open as well. I got those guys. They had a holiday over there. So, but they've been up all week. Over in Europe, we've got the... by the way, we're closed on Monday from President's Day. Kevin, is this the last President's Day as we start winging out presidents?
Oh, my. Yeah, we really can't. Washington? Lincoln?
Is there a president we like?
Why haven't we canceled this?
I know we should.
Tom, you need to get out ahead of the curve and have a show on Monday.
Oh, God. UK economy falls to a record 9.9% slump in 2020. Yeah, just pour money, enough money into where the markets are okay, right? DAX down 63.4%, FTSE up 8, call that flat. CAC round up 5, call that flat. So FTSE and CAC round have been pretty much zero movement the last couple of days. Bonds, 1.17, up 1 basis point. Bund minus 0.44, which is where they've been for a while. Japan, positive 0.06. They made it to 7, and they dropped back one here. Oil, down 47 cents, 57.77. The Brent is down 40 cents, but still over 60, 60.74. Natural gas up a penny to 2.87. They were just over 3. RBOB, does that mean we're going to warm up at some point, Manny? They come back down from 3? RBOB down a penny at 163.
We'll be warm by, I don't know, May.
But we're going to go from, what, 25 to 80 or 100 or something in a second. The gold down 10 bucks, 18.16. We got silver up 4 cents, 27 bucks. Copper down a penny, 3.75. And yeah, I'll give the crypto. Bitcoin up 56 bucks, 47,954. What's our lead in, Manny? It's worth nothing. Is that what the guy says? We learn nothing? Or what's
what did we learn, Palmer? Are you talking about at the end of the show?
Yeah.
He goes, I don't know. I don't know, sir.
Anyway, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports? There's a lot of weird traffic stuff, and it's freezing.
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. This is a new one, Chief. We have an investigation underway at Archer and Ashland to investigate a serious crash that happened at 4 o'clock this morning where apparently a car fell off the Stevenson Expressway onto the street below. It also hit a light tower, which knocked out the lights on the Stevenson in both directions between Ashland and the Dan Ryan. Illinois State Police confirmed two dead and two others taken to Stroger with serious injuries. But the investigation is underway.
Under or over speed limit?
I would say, I assume over, but maybe you don't have to go over to fly off the expressway. I don't know.
Just on a bridge or to get on the embankment?
I don't know. I'm trying to picture what exactly is right there.
Oh, Ashland, you're up in the air.
Yeah, you're up in the air pretty high. I'm surprised anyone survived, but that's a new one. But that has crews, again, blocking Archer and Ashland for that investigation. They're below the Stevenson. Not causing any delays on the Stevenson itself, though. Same for the Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford, all quiet. Eisenhower looking good. Same for the Edens and Kennedy. Lakeshore Drive is quiet as well. Off the expressways, we have a crash in the southwest suburbs, Route 53 at Renwick Road. And then in the northern suburbs, US 12 at Belvedere Road, there is a crash. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, more clouds, more cold, more wind chills in the single digits. A high of just 17 with some more lake effect snow today as well. So the snow continues to pile up and it's not going to melt anytime soon. And I was looking at the 10-day forecast and we don't have a chance to get above freezing until February 22nd according to that. So we're still 10 more days after we've already been doing this for 2 weeks. Today, overcast, a high of 17.
Even if we get to 25, it's better than 6.
That's true, but it's not freezing. Overcast and 13 currently downtown with a wind chill of 6 above zero.
It felt balmy this morning at 13, to be honest with you.
Yes. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 72. Right now it's clear and 56. In sports, the Blackhawks' brief two-game winning streak came to an end last night. They blew a 5-4 lead with 3 minutes left, giving up two goals to Columbus in the final 3 minutes and losing 6-5 in regulation. The Bulls were off last night. They'll host the Clippers tonight at the United Center. That's a 7 p.m. tip-off. Chief.
Kevin, we're not going into a economic class here that's going to put everybody to sleep. This is actually the class that I took from Milton Friedman, believe it or not. The Theory of Price, and it was a manuscript, and it wasn't even really a fully printed thing. It was kind of a, and some chapters weren't finished and stuff. But he didn't feel like he wanted to finish it. Even he was bored with it. But he taught a course in it, and it's incredibly complicated. What you two gentlemen have been describing, there's all kinds of supply and demand curves running through society. So if you look at a restaurant. In a sort of the theme of the show, not the economic part of it, but everything depends on everything else. I mean, if, for instance, and this is hard to do because all restaurants have different cost bases in terms of their fixed costs, right? Variables all the same. But basically, some people own the building, some people don't, some people have a good lease, some people spent $3 million putting TVs in there and there's nobody in the place. I mean, everybody's got different break-evens on the cost side. But the simple fact is, when it comes down to the food, pretty much, you know, obviously a neighborhood joint versus a really big place, there's a supply and demand curve. You're going to get $20 or 21 or 19 for a really good plate of pasta in a city. And by the way, you're going to get $9 a glass for wine or $8 or something. You're not going to get $4 and you're probably not going to be able to charge $20. There's a number there. But beneath that, there's a million other curves. There's a curve for salmon. There's a curve for pasta, and one of the curves is the one for wages. So when you estimate your place, and everybody does this, if I lease the space to Matty Weber and Matty and his brother are going to make a restaurant, I know how many seats are in there. I know how much you can make per person, or I should know if I'm leasing, or so I can get somebody to help me out. Here's what I can lease a thing for to Matty Weber and his brother, because I know their costs here and there, and for them to make a decent wage. Or a decent return, they got to do this and blah blah blah. Well, if all of a sudden the curve changes for labor, and the guys that they were going to take or ladies that they're going to make $10 for are now 12. Okay, now I'm going to say in a restaurant, Maddie, you know more than me. If you have 20 people working there, probably 12 of them are at that number, right? I mean, you got your head cook. I mean, or at least half. So if you're talking about an extra 10 people now, $2 more an hour, that's a lot, right? Especially over an 8-hour shift. It's not huge money, but it's something. My point is, if you knew that going in, if you're still starting from the same spot, $8 a glass of wine and $20 for a piece of pasta, now somebody else has got to give, right? And if somebody else just might be the lessor. Or it might be you and your profit, but eventually, if you're working your fanny off all year and the place is full, you're not making any money, you're going to go to your lessor and say, see ya. I just worked, 5,000 hours in this joint. I made 48 cents. You're going to say no. And the lessor's going to go, wait a minute. I still got to rent the place. The same thing's going to happen to the next guy's happening to you. What do I have to do? So a lot of it comes down to who gets what piece of the pie, right, Kevin? I mean, that was union wages. I want this much per hour. And the chief executive, I was going, well, if I do that, I got to cut my salary. Well, go ahead, right? Or I'm saying everything depends on everything else when it comes to this, correct? Except when the government's involved, they just print money and send it out there. I got to get that in there.
Yeah, you definitely have to get that in. Yeah, it's, it would be interesting to try and cover all those contingencies in a commercial lease, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean,
you sit down and say, "Here's what rent you're going to get if minimum wage is X, and here's what you're going to get if it's Y." I think the more the government intervenes in normal economic activity, you have to start thinking that way.
Well, your buddy and my buddy, John Flanagan, 3-4 weeks ago, I asked him to go through this because John is he's an attorney. It doesn't we'll get by that for a second, but. He specializes in title law and in commercial stuff. I mean, and obviously he can do a house closing, but he says, Kevin, a lot of these leases, a lot of that stuff is in there. I mean, there's a law firm that, what's the name of the guy's manager? They say they're not paying a rent. Oh, is it one of the big ones up on the north side? They have what, 12 floors in that place? You know what I'm talking about. I forget the name.
I forget the name too, and I do know who you're talking about.
But John says, you know what? They have a point. I mean, as to what number comes out of the settlement, he said, but they're going to be able to say this building, I got to move, 300 people up these elevators. And by the way, it's 6 feet apart. I can't do it. And it's the building's rule, not mine, or the city to the building. So I'm cutting my rent by, three quarters or something.
Jenner and Block.
Jenner and Block. I mean, John says they're not without cause. I mean, whether it's a 10% adjustment or 20 or 100, I mean, that's part of the negotiation in the courts, but, it's not like...
Yes, but somebody changed the product that I'm buying.
Right.
That's what you're saying.
Yes.
I just want to find a good Italian restaurant that has $8 glasses of wine that Chief's going to.
Because
the places Jill takes me to, that wine's a hell of a lot more expensive than that.
That's because you're paying.
I know. You can definitely get a good plate of pasta for $20 or thereabouts. I'm with you there. The $8 glasses of wine, I need to go to that place. I don't even think... our place over on the west side is $8 a wine.
Oh, Mark Anthony's? Sure, there.
Guys, you can do way better than that over where I live.
Yes.
So what you need to do is, if you factor in the total cost, even if you assign a little bit of money to your time, it's worth the trip.
It probably is.
Mark Anthony's, you can get the really nice house Chianti for like 8 or 9.
Okay, that's not... I love that place.
Yeah, it's not horrible.
Although their pasta is like 25, 27 now.
Yeah, it's up there.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I don't want to say this on the air.
What you need is my pasta.
Well, you know what? They have everybody's got a sneaky dish that if you're a cheapskate, which I'm not really, but they have a salad over there. This is not a commercial. They'll raise the price as soon as I say this. They have a salad over there for $11. You would think, well, who the hell wants to pay $11 for a salad? The salad is huge. Peppers, all kinds of stuff in there. And they give you three big meatballs, and they give you a big thing of bread. I mean, talk about dinner for $11. You barely finish it. I mean, I usually split a thing of calamari with somebody, and I have that salad, and I'm almost about to bring it home, for God's sake. I'm a big fan, so.
Sounds pretty damn good.
Yeah. But I don't think they know it's that much of a bargain, so I don't want them to hear it. But
yeah, quiet.
quiet. But I'm saying, you're right.
Like when my brother John first brought his... They weren't even engaged yet, but my sister-in-law, also at Jill, who is also wonderful, and first time he brought Jill over to the house, I pulled him aside after a little while, and I said, John, what the hell's a nice girl like that doing with you? And he said, shut up, I don't want her to know.
That's great.
Whatever, I could do a joke, but it's not politically correct. But I mean, you look at what you just said, though, Maddie. It's, I mean, you and I know that we can go over to the Vins, and we can get a 92 score bottle of wine for easily for $12-13, right? 91 maybe. You get something pretty good.
Right. I mean, then at the restaurant, they're going to sell for 50 or 60.
Well, but it used to be that the number was 2.5, 3 to 1, and now a lot of places are pushing 5, and that's a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot.
But you know they're doing it not because of the wine cost, but right. because of the lease cost, and we talk about that all the time, but they're doing it to survive.
Exactly right.
I don't think the owner of the place we were just talking about, I don't know why, Martin Anthony's, I don't think that guy's a super rich guy by any means.
No.
I think he does well, but I don't think, you know, him raising prices on pasta, he's not driving, you know, his 10th car.
No.
I just think it's really expensive to run a restaurant, right?
Yeah, and I think they might own the place, you know, the type of thing, but it's a second generation. And they got the family working there, so, I mean, they're doing all the things right. I mean, and they're terrific people, but, I mean, you go around the spot, and it reaches the point where you know who I first heard this from, scary as it may seem, is the chairman of White Castles, of all places. I haven't seen him back, and we're getting the wrong answer. The lady on CNBC says to him, what's the biggest risk to the restaurant business right now? And he goes, that's easy. He goes, the spread between cooking at home and having to pay restaurant prices has never been bigger. So people just say, yeah. I don't need this. I mean, right? I mean, I really like to go out to breakfast. I love to take Audrey to breakfast. And when we find, there's places by her in Homer Glen that are somewhat reasonable. But I'll tell you what, when Greg and I will go on any place even a place like the Hollywood Grill, replaced by him. I mean, for two people, an omelet and coffee is $45. I mean, that's a little up there with tip, or $42. For God's sake, what I buy at the Restaurant Depot last week, maybe 15 dozen eggs for $12. That's a lot of omelets.
Only you would buy 15 dozen eggs.
Well, I mean, by the way, a couple of them are earmarked for you. You haven't come down to get them yet, but I'm saying the spread is dramatic.
Don't piss Maddie off or they'll be earmarked for your front door.
That's right. But what I'm saying, you know, my point is that that's what ends up happening, to where people go, I mean, how would you bring a family of six out to breakfast now? It's $100, and it's a dozen eggs? You know, what are we doing? I mean, I understand.
You know what? Occasionally I'll go out, because Indiana's restaurants have been open for a while, but only since February 1st there in Michigan. But I would make it a point, and their prices, you know, it was pretty high. Just a carry out meal, you wind up spending $50-60 just for a carry out meal. But I wanted to support the local restaurants that the state had kept closed, and I wanted to make sure that they survived. And you know, the ones that matter to me most have survived, which is good. I'm real happy with that. But, you know, that's the only thing that was driving the decision. I wasn't making an economic decision. I wasn't even necessarily making a value decision of any kind on that. It was just, you know, I decided that I wanted to make sure I support the local business. I think that's probably the only thing that's kept, that mentality is probably the only thing that's kept some businesses afloat. And I don't know how prevalent that mentality is in Chicago. I just don't have a feel for it.
Well, people have done, they did, depending on that.
In a more rural area where the, you know, the community is very, very important, like here, it's a very prevalent mentality.
Well, some places, well, and
I think it's very prevalent here,
yeah,
too.
Where someplace
your neighborhood,
others.
You don't want to see more places boarded up in your neighborhood. So people are absolutely supporting the restaurant, the coffee shop, the bar, whenever they can carry out. When Tripoli started doing pizzas, people were doing pizzas, even though you can get much better pizza.
Yeah. Well, but those guys, they totally upgraded their sandwich menu. I mean, it's much better and will travel a lot easier than the old menu used to. And so they made some, but I mean, if you actually, actually we did this the first night, this all happened back in March. Audrey and I went to one of our local places I don't know what she got, but I carried out, you know, a couple of pork chops or whatever it was. And it was like $25. And I'm looking at it. Plus, pork chops don't travel well, I found out.
What's that, like $5-6 at the grocery store?
Oh, not even. But what is pork? I mean, if you go to the Peoria market, you get the best pork chops you can buy, and are, what, $1.50 a pound for pork? Maybe $2. I mean, if you go to, you know, the deli counter at the Whole Paycheck or something, they're going to be $5, but they're still not, They're not like steak. What I'm saying, but it's funny when you look at the economics of it.
Don't let me hang up without telling you the local steak story.
Okay. Go ahead. No, I'm just saying that these things that we learned and never thought we were going to need in school, Kevin. I don't know if we need them, but it's pretty fascinating to see your supply curves and all of a sudden something really sticks out, or there's a rapid change in a business while you're still under the old lease or something like that. To me, I don't like to see it happen to anybody, but it's absolutely fascinating that everybody in the world will say economists don't know anything. Okay, maybe they're predicting powers is not so hot, which I agree with, but to see this not working out as it was taught to me, it is. It's working out exactly as you would expect it by economic laws, right? And that's why when you see people in your government that are supposed to be in these positions and are supposed to know this stuff, it appear to be totally oblivious to it. You wonder how they got the job. It's like me getting the job to play center field for the Cubs. Couldn't you have found anybody? I mean, maybe if you hit it right to me, I might catch it. Maybe, but
I can't even think of the day when you would have played center field on a softball team.
I played once, and I was real happy to not get a ball. There you go, Kevin. our buddy Bob, who runs the Sunday morning softball, right? Now, he puts himself at shortstop one day, and I'm like, what are you doing? Well, I didn't say, but it's not my. He was on the other team. It worked out perfectly. We played 9 innings. He never got a ball.
There you go.
He scared him away.
How do you play shortstop for 9 innings and not get a ball? But he didn't. So he didn't cause anybody a problem, right? Every time I put somebody in the wrong position, inevitably, like, the first ball went right at him, right?
Right, of course.
All right, Kevin, give us your steak story.
Oh, the local grocery store, Martin Supermarkets, and I'm in there, and they have ribeyes on sale for, I think, $9.99 this week, which is great. You know, always grab ribeyes when they're on sale. But they also have ribeyes that are cut in the shape so that they fit into what appear to be kind of a candy or cookie, a heart-shaped candy or cookie plastic thing.
Really?
With a cover on it so that you can buy your heart-shaped pair of ribeyes, because nothing says love like some raw meat. God.
So are you one of the guys back on the trip? Dr. J started this because he's loved me. He's such a character. There was a Godiva chocolate place down the block. Actually, Godiva's closed all their places now, I saw the other day. Whatever, chocolate's pretty good. There was a place down on Clark Street, and the day after Valentine's Day, everything would be half price. And the regular stuff was still regular price, but if you had one in the Valentine's Day box, it was half price. So of course that stuff back then was $25 a pound or something. I mean, I'm talking 15 years ago. So Jan calls one to the trading. He walks into the trading pit with all his chocolate. So it turns out, like, the next year or two, they got like five clerks going down with orders from like 40 guys coming back with they buy the place out the day after Valentine's. And everybody, Valentine's on a Tuesday, you're taking your girlfriend out on Wednesday or a Friday, she doesn't know. I mean, literally, they would be coming back with like 100 pounds of chocolate.
Even better, buy a bunch of it and freeze it and just drag it out whenever you have to.
God.
There you go.
But that stuff was pretty good. So I went 1 year. Sure enough, yeah, it's you do the same thing at the Fannie Mae's. They'll be half price in the Valentine's Day thing the day after. So, I mean, I said to Audrey, of course, she's a hopeless romantic, but I put the question to her, do you want 2 pounds a day after or 1 pound the day before? And even if she had a swallow of pride, say, I'll take two the day after. What can I tell you?
Robert writes in on Twitter, and I think his point is that the service industry is bloated. But he says, 660,000 restaurants and bars in this country employ more than the automobile and airline industry combined. It's an unsustainable society. Can't simply sell Big Macs to everybody. They have to close.
I don't know.
I don't know, and there's...
Well, I don't think they have to close, but I think the economy itself, what's the mortality rate of restaurants? It's really high. If you go start a restaurant, its chances of being alive a year later are very, very slim.
I'll say it's less than half, isn't it?
And so if you better have something that is unique, something that makes you better than the rest, or you're not going to survive in that business. And so I don't, you know, there's a lot of churn that goes with that big number of restaurants. Now, on the other hand, he is right. We have to have an economy that makes stuff. But some of us live in areas where we actually do have our local economy is about making stuff.
Well, yeah, and I don't when you say restaurants again, it's a real big word. I mean, there's a lot of places. I mean, if you start talking about 15 places in a row that all cost millions of dollars in Orleans Square, yeah, could they get away with one or two less? I mean,
His greater point, and Kevin touched on it there, is that our society has turned into such a service-based economy as opposed to a manufacturing-based economy, to the point where it needs to shift back a little bit in the other direction.
Well,
I think that's his greater point.
Well, we already did have that shift working. I don't know what's going to happen now, but we already had a pretty significant increase in manufacturing jobs over the last few years.
Actually, we have, but the we're running into the that Kevin's always talking about. That's why, other than we like him, that's why we have him on the show. The
probably the only reason.
You don't have much time, but I don't know what I was going to ask you today. I forgot. I got to start pinning notes on myself like Uncle Billy. What is going on with these chips? You're our supply chain guy. They were closing auto plants and stuff, and nobody get chips. What's that? Is that when we're banning the ones from China, or what is the deal?
That's a good question. I don't know what the policy shakeout is going to be on this, but yeah, it isn't just chips. That becomes a hot issue because it's so important to our economic development. But we have all kinds of disrupted supply chains. And remember, I sent you something the industry report. On just, it was a manufacturing industry report, and the supply chains are just totally unbalanced. Our ability at different points, if you talk about acquiring materials and then our manufacturing capacity and then what the distribution networks look like and then what the last mile looks like, none of them balance at all. They're all completely out of whack. And so, you have some parts in the chain that can't get their hands on enough and others that are having inventory buildups. And, this is all, that's 2020. That's what 2020 has done. And it's going to take a while for that to work itself out.
Elizabeth, why don't we tee that up a little bit more on next Wednesday, if you wouldn't mind. SP Futures down 6.25, NASDAQ Futures down 14. Come back, we'll have Mr. Carl Denninger.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, AudreyJohnson@realtor.com. That's AudreyJohnson@realtor.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now. Right
here, right now, right now. There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allies. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Carl Denninger with us from MarketTicker.org. S&P Futures down 575. NASDAQ Futures down 12. Carl, I've been trying to give some semblance of an economics class here. Light enough, everybody doesn't fall asleep. I don't know how well I'm doing, but I think Maddie and we were talking about minimum wages, and Maddie and Kevin are absolutely correct. I did some I was going to do some expert witness stuff, and I was going through a lot of stuff for this one case these people had, and anyway, somebody was able to get some money out of somebody's account, and blah blah blah, and the money went to a couple of people in Louisiana and Alabama. Carl, I was going through the stuff, and I couldn't, first of all, I get the addresses, and I'm getting satellite photos and stuff, and it's like these little towns. I mean, you're in Tennessee now, I'm sure there might be some like this. These little towns with, that you wonder who the hell lives there, and I was going through people's, essentially their money, and it's ladies getting like, $1,000 on Social Security, house, God knows what the house is worth, but it's paid for. It's like $50 a month at the Piggly Wiggly, and the water bill's 10 or 20, and the electric bill. I mean, it's incredible how many people in this country are still, I'm going to say, at that level. I mean, in Chicago, you couldn't pay your gas bill with that, right? But the differences between areas is pretty shocking. Because Kevin was saying, how do you have a national minimum wage at $15? And I went through, of course, a whole routine about in Chicago. Going from 11 to 12 is a big deal because you're right at the market. Minimum wages, if you're nowhere near the market, it's no big deal. If you go above the market, you cause a big problem. But the disparity in this country is still pretty dramatic, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, just as an example, there's about a 400% property tax difference between here and even suburban areas in fairly low-cost states, about 300% for equivalent value between here and where I used to live in Florida. And Chicago? Oh, good Lord. Okay. I mean, oh, my. The place I used to live in off Lake Cook Road, still in Cook County, but just barely, $20,000 a year.
Yeah,
taxes. Okay, and I mean that's just from Zillow and public records. I can still look it up. Obviously, anybody can if you all you need is an address, right? And that is a fixed cost that one way or another every single person that lives somewhere pays, because if you bought the house, then you're paying it.
Right.
If you're renting the house, you're still paying it because guess what? It's in your rent. And so, people look at this to say, well, there isn't that, the cost of a pound of hamburger is another 25 cents here versus there or whatever. What I keep telling people is, look, if you believe anything that comes out of these places, like Best Places, these different websites that try to give you a cost of living comparison, whatever, if you believe a single word that they print, you're crazy. You're just crazy because they never capture stuff like that. And yet, that is the embedded base cost that essentially determines what your monthly nut is to live somewhere.
Well,
and there's no way around it.
But how do you, in a less articulate way, Carl? I try and say this to my significant other, or pals, are in the real estate business, and I'm nothing but trouble, maybe because I'm tongue-tied or something, but I keep saying there's one number. There's a number at which somebody can afford to live and afford a place. It doesn't really matter if it's rent or if it's mortgage plus all the rest of the stuff. If somebody can afford, they're in their wife's job, $2,500 a month to live, that's when they can afford. All the other stuff just moves around, right? So if somebody can afford $2,500 or $3,000 or whatever it is, and next year the interest rates go from 2.75 to 4.75, they can still afford the $3,000. The price now that moves is the price of the place. Or same thing with insurance, same thing with taxes. And it's, I don't know, I'm surprised. I really do wish more people would take economics, not just because I like it and remember it, but it's so predictive. There's areas that, when you were here, did you ever go out and like floss more in those areas?
Yeah.
Well, but what's happened down there is they've lost a couple of their big, retail places. And, so you can buy, considerably, like almost a palace in Flossmoor, and you might be able to get it for under $200,000 because the taxes are 30. So the people here in Illinois or any place that don't think that if taxes double after COVID, it's not going to come out of their hide in the price of their house. I really, whatever they paid for their education, they didn't pay enough, or they paid too much.
Well, and that's one of the things that I've been trying to impress upon the local government officials here, of course nobody wants to hear it.
Oh, right? God, no.
And it's like, look, you guys are calling everybody and their brother heroes, and you're passing raises for the cops, raises for these people, raises for those people. This is because this is a terrible, terrible thing, right? That we've got this virus circulating in our country, and it's awful, and these people are heroes, and the prattling that's gone on in the political class for the last year is just, it's nauseating.
Oh, yeah.
And I've shown up at three commission meetings in the last year and made a stink about it three times, because you do these kinds of things. You put these mask orders in place and stuff like this, and then you pat yourself on the back. And people die anyway because what you did didn't do anything. And then the problem you have is we, in this immediate area, have profited mightily from other people's stupidity. So Nashville, for example, had every single bar shut down in their entertainment district, right? Because they just said, you can't do this. Well, guess what? You just drove all the traffic 2.5 hours over here, right, from people that want to go out and party and have a good time, and which they did. They came here. And so our people are like, oh, look, our revenue numbers, and our sales tax numbers, they don't show that we really got pounded all that badly. And I'm like, you know what? Profiting from other people's stupidity is fine. However, do not ever internalize that to think it's permanent, because if you think these guys are not coming after you next with some policy, you're wrong.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt.
And now we've got the Biden administration originally, 100 days, wear a mask. What did we just hear yesterday when he was at the NIH? That is not going away until at least the end of 2021.
Two masks.
And now it's going to be two masks. And you know what my recommendation to them is? For the Faucis and the Bidens and all these other guys, make the second one a hefty plastic bag over your head and seal with duct tape. I guarantee you will not get COVID.
Right.
Now, then you might not like the side effects.
Right. I was reading. I get a lot of really – I'm not saying you don't. You get more than I do. But whoever signed me up for this COVID Central, I get all these articles with people. It's pretty interesting on the vaccines. Someplace, somewhere, I don't know if it's in this country or someplace, they're actually charting people getting vaccines. And when you think about it, from what I've learned about the disease, it makes absolutely perfect sense. It's like somebody who, it's just like the people getting it and with their own immune system. If you get the first shot, and then you wait, 10 days, 2 weeks for the second one, and then you get the second shot, the amount of people that have the vaccinations that still get COVID, if they're exposed to it, is fairly significant. But it goes down in other words, it takes that length of time for your antibodies to kick in. Just like if somebody catches it, that's why they're contagious and stuff to other people, because it takes 10 days to 2 weeks for their antibodies to kick in which case they're not contagious. They don't have it anymore, right. And they're not contagious. So, but they're charting people, and it's pretty interesting. They got it like by the day, Carl. they're saying, okay, you get your first shot on day one, you can still get it. You know, day two, day three, day four. And it's, but then you start getting to the second shot, or maybe even day 10 on the first shot, it starts to drop some. But like day 10 after the second shot, it's like zero. It was just,
well, and that's what you'd expect. The thing that bothers me about these places that are doing this is that the peak infection rate within essentially every state in the U.S. was somewhere in December.
Right.
Okay, and so, and the only variant that has any statistical correlation at all, because I run this data all the time. The only statistical variant is latitude and weather. All right, so North Dakota, South Dakota peaked before we did by about 2 weeks, and you look at Michigan, you look at Illinois, you look at Indiana. You go around throughout the states and you find is that exactly what you'd expect from a seasonal virus, which is that when it gets cold, people go inside, they don't get any vitamin D. Their vitamin D levels drop, they're more susceptible, and oh, by the way, here comes the bug. Okay. But the peaks all came in every case before the first person got jabbed in the arm.
Right.
Well, guess what? If you are vaccinating people into the decline when herd suppression has already been reached, the vaccine isn't why the curve is going down.
Well, it's helping. It should help.
Well, of course, it helps. Yeah. You know, being on the backside sure helps. But here's the thing: is that really the salient reason? You know, did we spend all this time and all this fear and all this, you know, all this promotion of this and suppression of that in order to get these things through the pipeline and out into the people, and essentially sacrifice 200,000-400,000 Americans when we had alternatives, just to give them jabs that came after the peak in infections had already occurred?
Normally, Carl, I'm always with you, but what's happened in Illinois, I think your numbers, well, I hate to say this to you, might be a little off. When I say off, the numbers aren't. But in Illinois, being that Chicago got all this stuff first because O'Hare Airport and all the other kind of stuff, being a central hub, if you were to look at the Illinois numbers, you can't look at the Illinois numbers as Illinois. Because I'm going to say Chicago had their peak June? Maybe?
Chicago's largest infection rate, actually the 7-day moving average of peak was November 20th.
But, okay, but there was a big drop in the summer.
Well, there was a big spike in the spring, yeah.
Yeah. And it was, but even that, Carl, what I'm saying is there were areas downtown, those kinds of things, a lot of people got it. Now, the second group was southwest side, which the first time didn't. My point is that in every state, even with you're looking at the gross numbers, there's areas, there's towns in Illinois, you know, I don't think have had anybody yet. So not everybody's on the downturn is what I'm saying. So the vaccination.
Oh, sure. Well, yeah. But see, that's always true.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, there's always pockets here and there. But here's another interesting thing. Your peak hospitalization number for your state was Thanksgiving.
Right. I agree. Yeah.
Today, as of yesterday, you've lost 2/3 of your hospitalization.
Well, I'm not disagreeing, right? What I'm saying is...
Well, but see, nobody's reporting that.
No, we are, but...
I understand that, but where's that all over the Chicago Tribune? Where's
no, it's
that
not.
On, you know, the nightly news?
Well, you're
is that what? That this thing's basically over?
You can't... You can't stop people... Even if there's no snakes yet left, you can't stop people telling people to wear boots if you tell them there's no snakes left, right? You got to keep telling them they're all over the place.
Well, I understand it, but what I'm saying is, facts are facts, all right? I mean, I look at the curve. Now, you look at my state, right, in Tennessee, and we're further south from you guys, and we're two and a half weeks behind you on that peak.
Well, I think in pockets, we're seeing both the herd immunity thing happening. I think the new strains, and I can't prove this, but my doctors told me this, the new strains, they think, are a little less... virulent, and the treatment's gotten better, even though the new strains.
Here's the thing: natural processes, because obviously a virus doesn't have a brain, right? Natural processes, though, work the same way. If you get infected by something, and your antibodies are cross-reactive with another strain of the same disease, you're still protected against the other strain. All right, so if you have two strains circulating, one of which makes people violently sick, and the other one gives people the sneezes, if because humans have brains, you will be, there will be revulsion if you see some guy puking his guts out on the side of the road
right.
as he's walking down the street.
Yeah.
Whereas the guy who sneezes, you're like, eh, okay, whatever. So the violently ill one is less likely to find another host before that guy either expires or recovers.
Well, I mean, that's why SARS, even though it's not as contagious as this, was not, well, it was a big deal if you had it, but if you had the SARS, I mean, you went home. I mean,
well, it burned out very quickly because most of the people had failed to find another host.
Right.
But here's the important thing, and this is the point about the vaccines that we don't know. We put these things out there without knowing this is true. And if it's not, it's very dangerous. If you have a vaccine that takes a deadly strain, a very virulent strain of a virus, and stops you from getting sick, visibly sick, but doesn't actually stop you from getting infected and transmitting it, you've just removed the natural selection bias that over time turns a virus into a nuisance. And if that has been done, if that's happened in this case, we won't find out for another 6 months or a year, but when we do, we're going to get pounded.
Carl, I was going to ask you that, but second half hour, I want to talk about the supply chain problems because, I mean, I'm intrigued by it, plus Kevin's awful good at it, but when you talk about this with the virus, I've read through, again, maybe not as much as others, but I've read through just how all this testing was done. And really, I'm going to say the shortcuts that were taken to get the thing out this rapidly.
And I
see why they did them. I see why they feel they're okay because they're not giving people the full virus. And I understand where they're coming from. But I also know they shortcut it to a certain extent. And it's surprising to me that there are people that, you know, I get paid a lot of money to write articles. I think they are. God, I'm reading them, Cowan. I'm going, do these guys even read? The idea that some people with the vaccinations could conceivably be carriers or have it at a lower level of intensity. If you read the way the tests were done, Carl, why should that be a shock for anybody? I mean,
it shouldn't, but you know what, Tom, and this is my biggest complaint about what we've done with regards to prioritizing the vaccines over treatments and therapeutics and things like this, which we did because the emergency authorization process requires under federal law that there be no effective treatment. If there is, you cannot get an EUA. It's illegal. And so the only way to do this was to suppress things like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and say, you know, not even test them. Don't even look at them. We don't know if they work. We don't know if they don't work. But you will not run those tests at the NIH and the CDC because no pharmaceutical company is going to do it. There's no money in it. They're generics. They cost pennies. So no one's going to do that. And there are others. The Israelis think they have found an inhalable solution that actually stops the infection in the lungs. Now, that's at this point, it's a phase two trial, so, you know, I mean, they know it's safe, they think it works, but it has in one small group, which is what you do with phase one and phase two trials, they had a 30 out of 30 success rate. That's not bad. Okay.
Yeah.
But we didn't even go down that road, and the reason is because if we had found anything that worked, then this entire expanded authorization stuff could not have been done. It was illegal. The FDA could not have approved them. And the question we didn't answer is, do you get sterilizing? In other words, you can't get it and pass it on, immunity from these vaccines. And we know from the animal husbandry business that if the answer to that is no, then you take something like avian influenza, which used to kill a decent percentage of the birds that got it, and you turn it into something that kills the birds 100% of the time.
Well, yeah, but that's, when you say something, I know you're showing your age here, but we say something's illegal. Nobody cares if anything's illegal anymore, Carl.
Well, I know. But if you look at the logic and you look at, you know, the financial incentives and then the other thing too is it's just government inertia. Okay, once the government makes a decision, they're going down a particular road and they're going to do a particular thing. They never admit they were wrong, ever.
William Kennedy had his term for that had to do with the A-bomb and how you were going to have to use it because you had so many people working on it. But I think he said events were in the saddle and they drove the men hard.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing is, I mean, you know, once we built the thing, we were going to set it off.
Oh, yeah. See, somewhere. We had to just...
we were going to set it off because we had to, you know, we had to justify this, you know, however many billion dollars, which at that time was a lot of money, we spent building this thing.
They had 250,000 people working on it.
I know.
That's a lot. I mean, digging up... They had two huge places they were digging uranium. What, one in... was it one in Tennessee and one in Oregon? I think.
Well, I know, you know, Oak
Kentucky?
Ridge was involved in a lot of that stuff.
Kentucky,
but of
somewhere.
Course, Oak Ridge did a lot of other research during that time and shortly after, you know, during the Cold War with regards to a clean nuclear power alternative, liquid fluoride salt-based reactors. And they're much safer than what we use, but the thing is what they found very early on during that research, because, of course, you know, everything was dual use, was that you couldn't make bombs out of what came out of those things. And if you tried, you ended up with extremely difficult to separate material that was unsuitable for military purposes, and so they abandoned it.
Well, you don't want anything that's not suitable for military purposes. We know that.
Well, you know, if you can cross subsidize both civilian and military stuff with each other's money, you can hide the sausage very effectively. It's really hard to do when you have to spend all the cash.
Oh, yeah. So we started talking. It's a shift because I can't say we beat the vaccine to death because it's still alive, but what is going on with, I mean, we have all kinds of stuff going on in the market here. And on one hand, we've got, you know, the 1999 phenomenon with new stocks and IPOs and all kinds of stuff. And the one lady yesterday that made how many billion dollars on the new matching ad, but, you know, hey, good for her. You know, I mean, that's America. But what is happening with other places where we're running into these supply chain? The last thing we need is Ford and General Motors plants closed because of chip issues. How many more little traps like that are there around?
Tom, there's thousands. And you want to, here's a really good one. About 3 years ago, there was a story that I got some wind of and did some reporting on where they found embedded chips in server motherboards that weren't supposed to be there. Okay, these things are all over government. They're all over the cloud computing companies. And Bloomberg just published a story, I think it was just published this morning, that essentially said, no, this problem's not gone. It said this investigation's still going on. Well, excuse me, guess where those little suspect things were put into the designs?
Probably China.
Oh, our best friend Z.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, you know, it's not like the PLA doesn't get into all these organizations. And oh, by the way, just think about this. Do you have any idea how many Chinese researchers are working in our bio labs?
Oh, it's huge. I mean,
they're all over the place. If they're going to put poison backdoors into our computer chips, excuse me.
But what is the motivation? I mean, I'm always looking where the break is. I mean, well, haven't gone down there too much anymore, but, Dr. J and I, on our loop, we always used to go to Chinatown one night a week. Those people have been here for 100 years. They have no more use in China than where's the break between obviously Chinese people that are here? There's the Arab people that live out in Orland. I've never seen a group assimilate faster than that group. They're so happy to not be in Saudi Arabia. What is the string on the people here that come from China that are still sort of doing? Is it because they're here and they're planning on going back? Is it because it's government sponsored? I mean, you don't have to worry about, you know, my grandfather being a fan of Mussolini during a war. I mean, he couldn't wait to get out of Italy.
That's not where the problem comes from. The problem comes from the fact that you never know. Unless you're really, really careful, and we're just not. Who that guy is he's here, he's been here, and, you know, he's third generation, or he's second generation, or maybe he's even first generation. He comes over here, and he's like, oh my gosh, I can choose where I live. I don't live in a communist country anymore.
Yeah.
I am never blankety-blanking having anything to do with blankety-blank-blank-blank ever again, right, in my life. Which, I mean, that's exactly what you want. That's, you know, that's the American assimilation success story, right?
Well, yeah.
But then, on the other hand, you have the guy who's actually is a PLA Army officer.
Well, but is it because, I mean, I was sitting next to, this happened to be Tripoli Tap, Maddie, and you weren't there before Jill. There's an attractive young lady sitting next to me. Why she was next to me, I have no idea. And we started talking, and she goes, I went to the University of Illinois, and I said, well, what did you study? She goes, oh, you'd never understand. And I said, well, try me. I've read a book without pictures once in my life. And she goes, I'm an actuary. And you don't know what that is.
Right. Yeah.
I go, yeah, I do. She goes, nobody ever does. Well, she tells me there was like 40 people in the grad class. 32 of them were from Asia or from China. I'm not all from China, but I think she said most of them were from China. I mean, is it the people that the government pays for? Because they pay full board. Illinois can't wait to get them, right, Maddie? They got more people know Asia, China than virtually anybody.
Oh, they pay premium.
They pay premium. So, I mean, they can't wait to, but I mean, the people who the government is paying, you know, 45 groupers a year or 50 to come here, obviously there's probably a string on those people if they're supposed to go back, right? A in what they're learning and B in what they might be telling them when they're here. I mean, but a regular guy or a lady who comes here from China who's not planning on going back, I guess you could put a string around her family over there, but I mean, what's the tag?
The family thing is the problem, is that if you get people to come over here and they have, you know, anybody left, all right, I mean, you know, your children, your grandfather, you know, that's always the way that regimes like that work. It's how they've always worked. And like I said, you've got a whole bunch of people that are here, and this is one of the things that gets very difficult, is that a whole bunch of people come here from any country, assimilated in the United States. They never want to go back. They love what America is, and they love America. And there's period. That's the end of it. The problem is there are some infiltrators who actually are agents, really are working for the other guys, and pretend to be those first group.
Well, after
and you'd better figure out who they are and separate them out, because those people are dangerous.
After a break, let's talk about it, because I was listening to the head of a carrier group, and evidently they do a whole bunch of shipping back and forth to China. I mean, you just thought the guy with the new administration opening stuff up to China, like the guy swigged a bottle of Viagra for God's sake. I never saw a guy so happy that we're going to be doing so much business with these guys. They don't care that there's people in concentration camps over there. I mean, how do you do this? I mean, what would you have said, you know, in 1936 to Lindbergh or Kennedy? Hey, this Hitler guy's great. Look at all the places that he's united. There's one customer, and they're paying cash. I mean, there's always been people. They don't care what anybody else does, as long as they make some money there.
Yeah, and that's one of the dangers, is that, and of course, the cheapest price for labor is zero.
Well, yeah.
So if you can compel it, then, you know, you have a competitive advantage that's very hard to overcome.
S&P Futures down 7, NASDAQ Futures down 23. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 7. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Mr. Carl Denninger, Mr. Matt Weber. S&P futures down 7. NASDAQ futures down 22. Been there. NASDAQ's came back a little bit. It was down 36, but the S&P's right there at minus 7. Been there the whole way. Dow futures are, let's see, most Asian markets are closed here today. But we have, why am I, my pre-market, my machine here is blocky, maybe. There we go. Dow futures down 34. Over in Europe, since Asia is mostly closed, we've got the DAX down 60.4%, FTSE down up 7.1%, CAC around up 14.2%. Bonds are 10 years, a positive 0.02 now, that's 1.18. The Bund minus 0.44, Japan positive 0.06. We've got oil down 23 cents, 58.01. Brent down 16 cents, 60.98. Natural gas up 7, 2.94, making his way back towards $3 as the cold snap continues. We can feel that. RBOB unchanged at 164. We got gold down 13 bucks, 13. It's down like $37 in the last couple of days. Silver unchanged at 27 bucks. Copper down a penny, 3.75. Oh, alright, I'll do the Bitcoin up 41 bucks, 47,939. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Coming up on 36 minutes past the hour, good morning once again to everyone out there. We're starting to see an array of accidents sprout up across the area. We'll start on the north side on the Kennedy outbound just before Canfield Road. So that's out west of O'Hare. There's a crash that's causing some delays if you're heading on the outbound Kennedy. And then further west on I-90, Jane Addams Tollway. Or Jane Addams Expressway, I should say. The right lane is blocked on the eastbound side before Roselle Road. So that's on the inbound side of the Jane Addams, and that's causing stop-and-go traffic as well further west on I-90. So a couple of issues on I-90, one on the outbound side at Canfield, one on the inbound side at Roselle Road. No issues on the Edens. We do have a crash on the Eisenhower, too, that's on the outbound side at Harlem. A car spun out. Apparently there's some slick areas out there. That is causing crews on the scene to get that figured out, but that's causing delays on the outbound Eisenhower. And then on the Stevenson, we have a crash that's been moved to the right shoulder on the northbound side at US 12. That happened a little bit ago. That's not causing much for delays yet as the crash has been moved to the shoulder, but there is a bit of a slowdown as you're heading on the inbound Stevenson. Furthermore, right off the Stevenson, there was a significant crash. This is a new one. We talked about it last hour, but a car fell off the expressway onto the street below on the Stevenson at Archer and Ashland there. It apparently hit a light tower on its way down, which knocked out the lights on the Stevenson in both directions between Ashland and the Dan Ryan. Illinois State Police confirmed 2 dead and 2 others taken to Stroger Hospital with serious injuries, but the investigation is continuing on the street below there in McKinley Park, below the Stevenson. So that's an interesting one.
So Stevenson's been there, I'm going to say, 50 to 60 years, the first time somebody's whacked that light tower.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, more clouds, more cold, and more chance for lake effect snow. We'll reach a high of just 17. The wind chill will never really get out of the single digits today. Right now it's overcast and 13 with a wind chill of 6 above zero. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 72. Right now it's clear and 57. In sports, the Blackhawks lost a high-scoring affair last night to Columbus 6-5. Hawks led 5-4 late in that one before giving up a pair of late goals in the third. Bulls were off. They'll welcome the Clippers into town tonight. That's a 7 p.m. Chicago time tip-off. Chief.
Carl, if you bear with me a second here, I was doing some research here, and there was a history of the U.S. here, and they're talking about the great crash of 29. And I didn't just write this, by the way, so just how eerie does this sound? To understand the crash, it is useful to address the decade that preceded it. Ding, ding, ding. The prosperous 1920s ushered in a feeling of euphoria among middle class and wealthy Americans, and people began to speculate on wilder investment. The government was a willing participant in the endeavor. The Federal Reserve followed a brief post-war recession in 1920 to 21 with a policy of setting interest rates artificially low, ding, 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 as well as easing the reserve requirements on the nation's largest banks. As a result, the money supply in the U.S. increased by nearly 60%, which convinced even more Americans of the safety of investing in questionable schemes. They felt that prosperity was boundless and the extreme risk were likely tickets to wealth. Could you write that today, Carl?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, one of the things that just stuns me, I kind of keep my finger on a pulse of what's going on in the markets, of course, and you know, it was part of what I cover. And the stuff that you've seen over the last, oh, good Lord, 10 years. I mean, all the way back to the housing crash, right, on the way back up from that. Oh, you know, we saved the world. Everything's fine. Oh, it's fantastic. There's going to be no bad effects from all this money printing that we did. Don't worry. Be happy. And boy, you really have been if you've ridden it all the way up, right? I mean, you know, from 666 in the S&P up to, you know, nearly 4,000 now. Hey, that's pretty impressive. And yet, did we actually increase, what did we do in terms of, if you look at just the money printing from the federal government, and then you back out the GDP increase, in other words, you derate it by just what the federal government ran in deficits. Leave all the private sector credit stuff out of it, just the government. And you do that. What you find is that the same pattern from roughly 1999 and 2000, which is when this really kind of sort of rolled over, has continued.
Right.
And this is a serious problem because you can do that, but essentially what you're doing is siphoning off the productivity improvement, which comes from people being smarter and working better as opposed to harder. And eventually that folds back on you. And it's the same thing that happened in the 1920s and led to 1929. It's the same thing that happened in 1999. You ended up with this huge speculative frenzy that blew up in 2000, which we all know about. You had the same thing, but it was more limited in terms of the sector it was in 2007, except it impacted people's homes, which is terrible. And now it's everywhere. It's like, you know, the Bitcoin, this stuff with GameStop, and, you know, I mean, we now have companies where you have everybody and their brother. There's a section on my forum that is open to anybody who has tenure and has been on there and has been posting for a while. And that's how you earn access to it, is by being a useful participant. And the number of people that are talking about these crazy penny stocks, it sounds like something out of the late 1990s when they had old boiler rooms running.
Oh, yeah. Human nature doesn't change. You ever read the, what's his name? I always forget the guy's name, Eddie. The guy who did Civil War and all the rest of the stuff.
Ken Burns.
He did a thing on 29 Crash. And the thing that I find most fascinating about his work, and I don't know where the hell he finds him, he has all the letters going back and forth from people of the era to really find out what people were thinking. That I thought was the most poignant part of the Civil War piece. I don't know if you guys did too, but the letters from people, you know.
Soldiers writing back to their families and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's heart-wrenching. And, but this one guy writes a letter to his dad who's, you know, some regular dad, probably a good guy, or you could say some schlump working in a factory. The letter was, "Dad, don't you understand? I made more money yesterday than you made in the last month, and you're breaking your ass, basically. That does that. What? Get your stuff. Get in this market. You make money every day." And And this whole. I mean, I like the part where now is Bitcoin gets to more and more More now, the banks are involved in it. Everybody, employees in the banks. I don't know if they get paid by Bitcoin. It's a big article today on CNBC. Carl, the thing is worth nothing. There's nothing behind it. You can say all you want about the blockchain, but you're not buying the blockchain. If you're buying the blockchain, that'd be different. But is there? What am I missing? Is there anything at all of value in this thing other than the fact that it's a bet on every other fiat currency, you know, going to hell basically, which could happen. But even if it did, I don't know how that makes Bitcoin the winner.
That's exactly the problem. Is that, you know, essentially what you're saying is that if I take a computer and plug it in and use it as a space heater, okay. Yeah. I mean, to literally use it as a space heater, that this entitles me to have something of value.
Yeah, well.
And you know what? And what I look at is I say, well, wait a minute. I can come up with 100 things. I mean, I go burn firewood out behind the house. Does that entitle me? You know, that produces heat. Does that entitle me to have something? And I look at this and I say, well, you know, where does this come from? Well, you know, Elon Musk has now said that at some point you'll be able to buy a Tesla with them. Okay, you've been able to do that for quite some time. You just convert it into dollars and you pay for the Tesla, right? Well, so essentially, the only thing that drove that huge spike with his announcement is that now what you're saying is you can speculate on buying cars with Bitcoins.
Well, that's the whole... Why doesn't the investment public or the news media... If the thing is a replacement for money, I mean, obviously it would be a great thing if I got my paycheck. Say I made $500 this week, and all of a sudden the $500 is now worth $750 next week. And your currency, your basically your medium of exchange, if it just went up, but nobody, you don't want your medium of exchange fluctuating like that, do you?
Well, no, so the problem is that, you know, everybody says, well, look at how much money I made. And I say, well, wait a minute, there's a problem here, which is that a medium of exchange that does that benefits one person and screws somebody else.
Well, right, and, that's not what you want.
And the problem is the guy on the other end that you pay, he gets blanked. All right? And so you don't want that. A medium of exchange needs to have a stable set of value.
It's more like a tulip than a medium of exchange to me. Am I wrong?
Well, no. It's pure speculation. It is. Think about what we've done though to the stock market. Okay, it used to be that most of your companies paid a dividend, and so you could discount that cash flow over some period of time, and you could make a rational analysis of what the firm's worth, based upon its liquidation value plus its dividend payout.
You still can. You just wouldn't buy anything.
This is classic economics, right? Well, guess what? Nobody pays a dividend anymore. And so now all you have is speculative premium because how much, you know, Amazon, okay, they've got their stock price, but what is Amazon, if you were to liquidate all those computers in their AWS data centers, they'd be worth 5 cents on a dollar. Right, because they were sold a year ago. They're worth nothing. The new ones are faster and they use less power, and that means if you have your choice, you'd buy that one, because why would you buy the old one?
Well, there actually are companies though that are valued the old way, and that's one thing always fascinated me about the business. Is my first one I followed like that was eBay. I mean, I was too young for NBC and railroads, right? But eBay was the same way. I mean, at one point they were charged. Didn't they charge like a buck a transaction very early on, something like that?
Yeah.
I calculated. I got out my, which you should never do, Carl. See, you're guilty of the same kind of crap I am. You never pull out your calculator because all it does is aggravate you. So I pull out my calculator and eBay's trading for God knows what. And I'm thinking, all right, at this price, for them, a dollar a deal, even if I said, okay, if they make 50 cents a deal, which they probably didn't, in order for this thing to be worth this price, they have to make this much money. And oh, by the way, send me a check for 40% of it. I think I calculated every man, woman, and child in the country had to make 3 transactions a day. Of course, eBay, and all of a sudden one day, somebody decided, guess what? It's just another retailer, and now it's priced like another retailer, fairly. I mean, I guess fairly, but way lower than it was. And all of a sudden, Amazon, which sort of does the same thing, although they've taken it to an incredibly new level, they're the new eBay, right? Or Etsy or somebody like that. And yet it's, someday people will say Amazon's a very good retailer, but guess what? They're just a retailer. And of course they can hide it for a while by going into cloud and those kinds of things. And some of these companies are really good at reinventing themselves, Carl. I mean, I think.
No doubt. And, you know, and that's absolutely true. But what I keep, you know, what I keep looking at is that the reality is that the market, that equity generally isn't equity anymore. It's all speculative premium. The percentage of the average firm stock price that's actually represented by dividend payouts and liquidation value of their assets is, for all intents and purposes, zero.
Well, yeah, I think I'm going to take a stab at this and tell me if I'm way out on a limb here, which I could be. When you look at the money supply in the country, okay, in this particular, and the way we run it here, which is, I think, somewhat unique. Carl, I don't know, but man, I've never been to these other places in the world, but if you have $1 million, you plunk it in a bank, and the reserve requirement is 20%, I can go get a loan, well, if I have, you know, something, I get a loan for $800,000. If I put it back in a bank, now the money supply is $1.8 million, right? Because we both got...
Right.
So, I mean, you can keep doing this. So, I think to a very large extent, the same thing happens. It surely happened on the commodity side with the Hunt Brothers and those guys. Because if you need a $2,000, let's say you need a $2,000 margin, it's not margin, good faith deposit, they call it now, for a silver contract, and all of a sudden silver runs up, and your equity's $4,000, well, you can go buy another silver contract, right, and not have to pump any more money because you've got $4,000 equity now. Actually, if it went up again the next day, so you don't have to pony. It's almost like your money supply is increasing. Same thing with all these stocks go up, the amount available to be borrowed to only have to put down 50% of the next one goes up dramatically by the day, right? So it's almost like the money supply is increasing because your margin capability is increasing almost geometrically the way the market's been behaving. So it's not surprising to me that if a new stock comes out and you own, I won't say IBM because all it does is go down, but if you own McDonald's or Home Depot or someplace or Disney, the Disney went up last night. I mean, Disney's up, I've got it up 239. So Disney has, let's say they got 1 billion shares outstanding. There's now $2 billion more there. There's $1 billion more to be borrowed by somebody to buy the guy meets girl thing from yesterday, right? So it's just like your money supply is going up, correct? Because your buying power is going up dramatically.
Well, exactly, but that is exactly what ends up ultimately when you disconnect things like this and you essentially put a geometric series in place of, you know, what should be a rational pricing mechanism. Eventually, you end up with a 1929 kind of situation because somebody wakes up. You know, so what I used to say back before the last crash is that every morning, all the traders wake up. Everybody who buys and sells stocks, we all wake up, and some percentage of us are fearful, and some percent of us have morning wood like nobody's business for what we're going to make today, right? And as long as there's some balance there, that's fine. The problem is when 3 o'clock in the morning comes and everyone wakes up in a cold sweat, you're in a lot of trouble.
Well, yeah. This stuff is all very basic to me, Carl, because I used to teach this. Well, I still once in a while do. Whenever I get a group of 60, 70 people to seminar, I start talking about why you buy a stock. And they, you know, you like this and you got this newsletter writer and you heard this guy on TV and blah, blah, blah. And you go in there and you buy Beyond Meat, okay, or whatever. And then who do you buy it from? What do you mean? I just bought it. Well, no, I mean, who did you buy it from?
Right, who'd you buy it from?
They go, well, I just bought it. No, I said, but you bought it from somebody. You don't buy it from the market. The market is just, it's just a mechanism for matching buyers and sellers. I said, there's a guy on the other side that you just bought 100 shares of Beyond Meat from, and he maybe did exact same work you did, and maybe he did twice as much work as you did, and he's more than willing to sell it to you. What makes you think you're smarter than him today? They look at you like you got four heads. The thought that, I mean, when you go out and buy an old baseball card for $1 million, who's happier that day? You or the guy who sold it to you? I don't know if you're buying a boat. If you're buying a boat, it's the guy who sold it to you, right? that's the rumor anyway on boats. But there's the process that we have. But that's why we say why does the chief sit there, and I'm talking about myself in a third person like I'm a halfback. Why does the chief basically rag about the market going too high when he's in the business of investing for people? Well, and that's an interesting question. Because as a unit, I mean, which is what I try to do for my people is to make sure people are hedged and protected which of course is not very popular when the thing goes up every day. But this is, I honestly believe, Carl, given the taxation change, the tax law and the margin laws, every time we collapse, it's usually the day that the margin interest is at a peak. If a stock goes from 100 to 200 and back to 100, I honestly believe, and I think I could probably, you know, if I had a, could have a couple of guys that knew how to do some math for me, I'm going to say that more people lose money on the way down. More money's lost on the way down than was made on the way up. It's not even close if you take the tax piece of it together with there. That's why I don't like to see that happen. I just want stuff to be valued the way it's supposed to be. I want companies to be worth more every year than they were the year before. And that's what drives the price up. That way we all can do fine. But it never does that. It's either way too much or way too little. I mean, where am I wrong?
Well, yeah, that's basically the, you know, that's the deal. And I look at what's going on right now, and the disconnect is just crazy, especially. And here's the thing that bothers me more than anything else about this. You know, behind every unit of economic activity, at some point, is a unit of energy.
Right.
Okay? And you have an administration that is now in power, and this is one of the things that, you know, that I was pointing out when during the campaign. No matter how you feel about Trump, no matter how you feel about Biden, from a political point of view, the reality of it is that we have history on this. And we have logic as well when it comes to green energy and, you know, shutting down oil pipelines and natural gas and things like this. Germany did this, and the power prices over there have doubled. And the reason it happened is because sometimes the sun does not shine and sometimes the wind does not blow, and your alternatives are you must have the standby capacity, which you have to pay for whether you use it or not. And if you don't, then there are going to be no lights. And so, yes, you can do this. Yes, you can go down this road, but because it's not reliable, and there's no way to make it reliable because you're dependent upon the weather and, you know, what's going on there, then that's how the economics work out on it. Well, what happens when you double the cost of energy that goes into everything that you, that, I mean, it's not just your power bill, it's your house. It's the cost of energy that goes into everything that gets produced.
Yeah, I agree. I want to expand that a little bit. When we talked with Kevin, I want to talk about with you a little bit, the supply chain disruption. I want to dig back to the IPO yesterday, the one where the lady, Maddie, explained it earlier because he's a younger guy and knows what the hell he's talking about. Instead of the guys chasing all the girls, this one, the guys just put themselves on there and the girls find the guys. Which, after all the other ones that go the other way, I guess, I think it's spectacular that this lady found something, and we're going to do something totally different, and guess what? She's being rewarded for it. So good for her. But that is really, that's the whole point of our economy, where somebody sits there and says, God, this guy's whacking these nails in with his arms, and guess what? There's 30 guys there, and they're doing this how many nails per hour. How about if I invent a nail gun, and I can do it even faster? I mean, that's been the American way from day one. Is it people, you don't even know what they're talking about, though. Sometimes they go on TV and say, here's the way people put this thing together, and I found like a little better way, and now 30 people have bought this thing from me, and by the way, I'm making some dough. They sense something that could be done a better way, and they do it. And now we're having these supply chain disruptions, and now the federal government's getting involved and helping this out. But somehow or another, I'm trying to see how I could prove this somehow if I was a professor. We'll give this to Russell maybe, but is the fact that we've let so many places combine and so few seemingly new places, you know, the amount of businesses I think sometimes is going down here, even though are we stopping that by, you know, if the one place, if the four manufacturing companies got 90% of the business now, if they don't want anything new happening, or I mean, is there a reason why that the economy isn't responding to the chip problem without Biden talking about it? I mean,
well, yeah, and you're absolutely right. And the concentration is really dangerous. So, like, one of the places, a disaster that we narrowly averted last spring, and I know this because I know people in the dental industry that, you know, they're dentists and endodontists and stuff like that. You know, they're the guy that you know, does it, gives you the root canal, and then, you know, has to. But in order to get a root canal, you have to have the files, which are one-time use. Okay, they go in there and clean out all the junk, and then in order to make the crowns, you have to have these funky cubic zirconia based things that go in these machines, which are all patented, and the device charges the dentist X number of dollars per time that you put one of these blocks in the machine, and the computer prints essentially by it's a mill. It's a small little milling machine that makes the crown that goes on your tooth. All right, well, guess what? A couple of guys I know that do this work, they recognized the potential disruption from the lockdowns, and they got themselves 6 months' worth of supplies. And when the stuff started, they couldn't get anything. Well, if you have to have a tooth drilled out now, you better have those files and those supplies. All right? But this is what's happened, because there is no six... There aren't 25 places to buy this stuff from. There's three.
Oh, yeah. Right?
And if all three of them are shut down, oops.
Well, whenever the government gets involved and we need to make some of these things, like whatever it was, masks or you name it, all I kept thinking about is communist Russia, where everything was run from the government, and when they made nails, they paid people by the pound, and all they made were railroad spikes, you know, or something. The whole idea here is people sense a need and they move toward it and they fill the need. Once you stop doing that, our buffoons can't tell everybody here what to make. I mean, I don't
know. Well, no, and you know what? That's the problem, is that the centralization, it happens within industry as well. And when you disincentivize and essentially make impossible setting up new businesses by putting all, you know, this larder of costs that doesn't apply to the big guys because they just cheat. They don't care, because they're not going to go to jail. They're not going to get arrested. They're not going to get busted for tax evasion. You try it, and immediately you're going to get the slam.
Oh, God, yeah.
Well, you know, or they just start blocking permits and things like that. I mean, you know, there's 100,000 ways that this corruption plays out. When it gets to a certain point, you have no innovation, and then you run into real problems whenever there's some kind of supply chain issue.
Well, that's what we got now. All right, Kyle, thank you very much, buddy. Have a good week. We're off on Monday. President's Day. Is this the last President's Day? Are we firing all the presidents? No Washington.
Well, I don't know. You know, we're trying to fire one who isn't a president anymore.
Well, but yeah, we also don't like Lincoln or Washington. I wouldn't exactly put Trump in that category.
That's true. You know, they may tear Lincoln Memorial down within the next couple of years.
Yeah, he could have done more. Name me a person who's ever lived that couldn't have done more.
Wasn't enough, you know, and then sitting on the throne, boy, that is white privilege.
Okay. Yes. He did, even with the beard and the gargantuan disease and everything else the guy had. SP Futures down 11, NASDAQ Futures down 41. Back on Tuesday, Saxon Jacks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.